It is good to be with you, it always is. And to have this opportunity to speak on behalf of Urban Christian Outreach once again, and even more importantly, on behalf of the gospel that we all love and share in working for together. I have actually a fond attachment to Parkdale United Church. Yours is a church I attended briefly before moving into the Sandy Hill neighborhood a few years ago, and you were very good to me. And as Anthony has mentioned, you have graciously supported UCO, Urban Christian Outreach, with your Easter offering for, I think, a full decade now. And it's that kind of steady support that makes mission happen on a steady basis. And we have greatly benefited from Barbara Fort's work with us on the board of UCO. Barbara has worked faithfully with us for more than 6 years. And we do want to say thank you, Barbara. UCO and I say thank you for your presence and your work with us there. And I have also been strengthened in my task by Anthony Bailey's steady insight with his practical and spiritual wisdom as he has served in the capacity of spiritual advisor to UCO for about 6 years now, and even longer alongside me. This is a kind of work that should never be undertaken without people of wisdom behind you and with you. And I have indeed been blessed, and in a good-sized measure through this congregation in these ways. I'm grateful to your outreach committee for their continued interest and support over the years. UCO is fully funded through the churches. We receive no government funding. Without gifts such as yours, the work could not continue. And those people behind the scenes, from your point of view, in UCO, also say a sincere thank you to all of you. I'm also very much aware of Parkdale United Church in positive ways for other reasons. I hear about your In From the Cold program and the many ways you care for the poor of your neighborhood. I hear about it on the sidewalks downtown. It warms my heart to know that there are churches attempting to live out the gospel call to care for the poor and the oppressed. This city is a better place because of your dedication. Suffering people in this city are hurting a little bit less because of your care. Thank you. Just a quick overview of UCO's work and style and task. As you know, most of you will know, the mandate of Urban Christian Outreach is for Christian, spiritual, and pastoral care on the sidewalks of the city, and for adult education work, especially in the Royal Ottawa Mental Health Centre on Carling Avenue, for those clients of the hospital who wish to upgrade their literary skills. My task is many and varied, actually. My task is also to speak in area churches, not just about UCO activity, but in biblical advocacy for the needs of the poor and God's heart for those who struggle to survive in urban society. UCO works one by one. We work quietly. It's often a task of filtering into the cracks of downtown life and getting to know the milieu of the sidewalk so that individuals may seek out conversation and help with privacy, as they often wish to, away from their peers amongst the poor. On a personal note, and as Anthony has already mentioned, this morning is especially poignant for me because it will surely be my last opportunity to preach in your service as executive director of this small and distinctive organization, Urban Christian Outreach. 18 months ago, I informed the board of UCO that I planned to complete my UCO task at the end of May 2008. And I think Barbara will vouch for the fact that none of us can quite believe how fast this date is racing to meet us. My decision was carefully and prayerfully discerned. It has been my privilege to work in a salaried role with Ottawa's poor, with three different agencies, for 21 years, the last 15 years with UCO. 21 years, my task has come of age. This aspect of my task has come of age. I plan to take 3 months this summer to empty my heart and mind of the wonderful and demanding preoccupations of the past 21 years and to ask God what God wants of me in the next piece of my life and work after UCO. Who knows where that will lead me? I expect to always have a special love for Ottawa's poor, for the work of Urban Christian Outreach, and for the people and churches that have supported me in this task. Over 21 years, it's hard for me to convey to you the bond that I feel with the people and the churches that have supported me in this task. For several months, the UCO board and I have been in a transitions planning process, and we will shortly be interviewing to fill the position. Please pray for that discernment process, and please remember the new person in your prayers and givings in the coming months and years. This person will also need your support, and in a special way, as she or he starts out on their new adventure and their new venture with Urban Christian Outreach, whoever that person may be. Our scriptures this morning bring us a strong message, don't they? A strong message indeed. A message with many strands and threads. It is a message about deliverance, physical and spiritual. It is about first, physical and spiritual. It is a message about the presence and provision of God in adverse circumstances for the oppressed people of God. It is about faith and lack of faith. It is about the focus and center of that faith being in the right place, centered in the redemption that is free gift to us through Jesus Christ. These scriptures remind us that we are people on a journey, aren't we? We're not called to be settled people. We are people on a spiritual and practical journey. And sometimes I don't like that. I wish we could be settled. But we are on a journey. Our scriptures remind us about living simply and, more importantly, simply living. These scriptures raise the question for us then, what is true life? Sometimes I think it's hard to improve on the ancient answer of the church. The chief end of a person is to glorify God and enjoy God forever. What a wonderful calling. What a wonderful calling when that actually filters through to my consciousness, which isn't too often, not in the way that it should, to glorify God and enjoy him forever. What did you enjoy about God yesterday or this week? Glorify God and enjoy God forever. The tug of society lures us towards other options that claim to offer true life. Messages bombard us that say that true life is about acquiring more property, possessions, and power in society. Not merely enough, but ever increasingly more. I'm not one to say that matter doesn't matter. I've seen enough to know that it does. And God gloriously created this material world, and God surely wants us to enjoy it. But recent studies have demonstrated that for those people of middle and upper income, more material things do not bring more happiness. Perhaps partly because so much time and energy is then spent maintaining and safeguarding property and investments, and little energy is left for simply living. The same studies, however, indicate that for the poor, more material possessions do indeed bring an increase in happiness. Because likewise, dire poverty also leaves little energy left over for simply living. In our society, perhaps we have lost the concept of enough. It's a life-giving idea, and this has a direct bearing on the experience of poverty on the Canadian scene. Oh yes, I do realize there are absolutes of poverty. It is never life-giving to be perpetually cold and hungry. It is never life-giving to be a slave people intimidated by the pharaohs of our Canadian society. And there are many pharaohs, aren't there? But in my 21 years of work amongst Ottawa's poor, I have discovered the fairly obvious that the experience of poverty in Canada is largely relative. You have to be a very strong person to keep your sense of self-worth when you live in a small, dirty, run-down apartment with few possessions, and the person sitting beside you in church lives in a splendid mansion across town. You have to be a person of strong faith to hold on to the reality of your own relationship with Jesus in the midst of crack house intimidations and rogue landlords, landlords who, let's remember, hold keys to your apartment, when at the same time your poverty workers in the helping agencies go home to the relative comfort and security of suburbia for 14 hours of their day. You have to be a very strong person in your poverty to keep your true sense of self and God. Yes, the pain of poverty is largely relative. I have met some strong people amongst the poor, despite the fact that our society does not make it easy for them. Mo and Amy lived in two rooms in a crack house. They were delighted when they found a small apartment to share. I asked them, how are you going to do your move? Knowing that they had no wheels, they had no vehicle. What kind of help do you need? Said Amy and Mo, all we need is a plentiful supply of bus tickets. On moving day, they would pack their few possessions in many bags and carry them across to the new apartment by making numerous bus trips. Excited about their new possibilities for simply living, free from the intimidations of the crack house. Obviously, they had no beds, they had no chest of drawers. Fold-up mattresses seemed to work just as well for them. These were two strong people. They were Christians who no doubt would have liked to possess some more things, but felt no pressing need of more. They knew how to live simply and thereby simply live in uncluttered enjoyment of the presence of God. Yes, apart from the strong few, such as Amy and Mo, the experience of poverty is relative. And so those who do not consider themselves poor, let's think about this for a moment. Those who do not consider themselves poor hold it within their power to start changing this affliction. To start changing this affliction by rejecting the philosophy of ever increasingly more possessions as a hallmark of success. Those who do not consider themselves poor hold it within their power to embrace points of real connection with those who struggle in poverty. As Christians, I suggest we will want to do this for our own sakes also. Otherwise, surely we miss out on real life, that opportunity to glorify God and enjoy God forever, that opportunity to simply live. Embracing points of real connection with those who struggle. As I read today's scriptures, as I hear them read, I am impressed with the fact that that was a big part of the secret to Moses' phenomenal leadership. Though he was brought up in the privilege and affluence of Pharaoh's court, he recognized very early that he could not help these oppressed, enslaved people if he simply did a job of helping during the day and then went back to the security and comfort of the palace at night. He realized this would not work. He could not be a spokesperson for the poor in that way. Just imagine the privilege and security he left behind when he crossed over to live his life amongst them and still to be a bold voice for them in the courts of the king from that new vantage point of close involvement and living amongst them. When the people were in danger, Moses was in danger. When the people were thirsty, Moses was thirsty. When the people rejoiced at God's deliverance, Moses danced and sang and had a party with them. The only thing, it seems, he didn't share with them was their grumbling, although he did his own grumbling to God, and I think that's all right. We can always grumble to God. Moses chose to live, to simply live in the presence of God and God's oppressed people. In my work and task with Urban Christian Outreach, I have conversations with others who head up poverty agencies in Ottawa. There is an informal network, an informal kind of thing that happens out there. It has to happen for this to work well. And I want to tell you that some of the most experienced leaders of poverty in this city, some of the individuals for whom I have the greatest respect in this city, are dissatisfied with the programs and methods of helping in our city of Ottawa. They express dissatisfaction with the programs and methods and results of their own programs. Personally, I believe that this Moses-style identification is a springboard for effective outreach and social and spiritual change. It's a springboard for building trust. It's a springboard for redeeming individuals and redeeming neighborhoods. We need more dedicated and mature Christian people who will live in the troubled neighborhoods of our city. And I suggest it's rare amongst the churches. It's rare amongst helping agency workers. A few days before Christmas, I was approached by a man on the downtown streets who asked me if I knew of anywhere he could stay for the night. I was aware of various social service options for him quite close by, and I plucked one out of my mind and asked him if he knew of this one. Wonderful group, doing wonderful work. He replied, "I know it's the place to go to if you want to get stabbed." And few people are more aware of this dilemma in our downtown areas than the staff who run these establishments. They are faced with an impossible task, impossible for many complex reasons, but partly because Christians have given up on the downtown city. Christians have taken their salt and light away from downtown neighborhoods and then proceeded to deplore the decay of those neighborhoods. This challenge comes to Christian workers and to Christian lay people alike. It's in our power to do something about it. Points of identification. We're not all going to sell up our suburban homes and move into simple accommodations in the city, nor should we all, though I do believe some should. Let's think small for a moment. I want to tell you a very simple and, you may think, rather foolish story. I hesitated to tell you about this, but about building bridges, but please indulge me just for a few moments. Let's think small. Last year, I was extravagant, and I bought myself two new pairs of winter boots, thinking that when one cracks up, I will still have another good pair to last me through that winter. Not at all according to Jesus' way that she who has one pair of boots should give to him who has none. Sermon on the Mount, folks? Not at all heeding Jesus' words. I wore those two pairs of boots throughout last winter. I put them away as perfectly good boots in the spring, and when I took them out in November, both pairs were leaking. No, I am puzzled. I don't understand how that can happen. Nevertheless, it was true. How could that happen over the summer months? Well, so much for not living one day at a time, according to the Sermon on the Mount, one pair of boots at a time. I decided I had already spent my boot budget for a while, and so no new boots until February sales at the earliest. With the constant cycle of this winter's snow and thaw, I had very wet feet for several months, you might imagine. And, as you know, Urban Christian Outreach teaches an adult education class in the Royal Ottawa Mental Health Centre twice a week. It's a wonderful group of clients of the ROMHC, inpatient and outpatient, who have missed out on education possibilities for various social and health reasons. They study basic math, English writing skills, GED studies with UCO. I love these students. One day, as the students were leaving, I said to them, "Enjoy the warm weather they are promising us this weekend, but be sure to put some plastic bags inside your boots." It just spilled out very spontaneously, and I noticed the startled expression on the face of my co-worker. I also heard the knowing chuckles from my students, and I observed the delighted smile on the face of my most difficult student. He knows about leaking boots. He's lived on the streets. I was talking his language. A week later, in that same classroom, the subject came up again. I found myself complaining to a volunteer, I complain to a volunteer, about how wet and cold my feet had been yesterday. And she said to me, "Well, that's easily fixed." I asked, "How?" She said, "Buy a new pair of boots." I commented to my wonderful volunteer, "You know, that's not always an easy solution." And, I added, "There are a number of students in this classroom who would not find that an easy solution either." And those students within earshot, they smiled and they sat taller at their desks. I thanked God for my leaky winter boots, such a small, small thing that built a real bridge of communication with my students. I should add for the record, because I know some of you will be studying my boots as I leave church today, that I did buy a new pair of boots. I found them in the Giant Tiger sale last week. I now have dry feet and it feels wonderful. A small, small thing that built a bridge. Just imagine what the Christian church could do, what you people could do, what the congregations across the city could achieve with larger choices for identification with the struggling and the poor in housing, in lifestyle, and in neighborhood living. Just imagine. think small and think big. I believe God uses the large and the small offerings as we opt for living simply in the cause of Christ and in the cause of simply living. Like Moses, more importantly, like Jesus. Jesus, who is the center and source of our joy and redemption. Jesus, who set aside all the glory of heaven that was rightfully his in order to come among us in simplicity, to reconcile us to God, to set us free from our own interior sins. Jesus, who stood and still stands against the oppressors in society that beat us down, that beat other people down. Jesus, who invites us to simply live and who makes that possible when his church is willing and available. We are his hands and feet. Let's remember, we are his hands and feet. I hope this isn't irreverent, but I sometimes think of Jesus as a little bit lame and stumbling when we are unwilling, because he's lost the use of his hands and his feet. Think for a moment about Jesus, his style of conducting his ministry, and his moment of connection with the woman at the well in our gospel lesson this morning. From the time of his baptism onwards, Jesus was intent on taking the gospel to the people in his community, teaching and bringing forgiveness and healing. His life was steeped in prayerful relationship with God, his Father, and his outreach was intensely relational. Considering the crowds that flocked to Jesus, is it not somewhat surprising that he did not mobilize his executive, those 12 followers, to purchase a splendid hall or rent the largest stadium in town or to open his own drop-in center? Good though these things could be, no, Jesus resolved to personally walk the pathways of the common people, to share the dust and heat of the day, to seize upon a dinner invitation as an opportunity to share vital truths, to borrow a boat as a preaching platform on the lakeshore. Jesus chose to forego the comfort of a ministry center or even a steady home base in order to be in vital relationship with the people of his community, especially the poor. In his humanity, it therefore came very naturally to him to cross the usual boundaries of race and culture. In our gospel lesson, it was a natural part of his way of life to strike up a life-giving conversation with this woman who had come to draw water at the well. With a woman despised by her own people, a person of another race, three strikes against Jesus in the way people would think. It came very naturally with him to cross those boundaries, not only to engage her in conversation, but also to ask her for help. Because Jesus himself was thirsty, and it seems none of his team had thought to leave him with enough water. This is the ambience of how Jesus worked, to the shock of his contemporaries and the religious establishment. Now, I don't believe Jesus did these things in order to draw attention to himself, nor in order to merely shock. Jesus lived this way because it came entirely naturally to him as he went about the business of simply living in the presence of God and the social outcast. And that way, Jesus changed a single life, this woman's life, and through her, the life of a whole community. That way, Jesus changed a single life, and through her, the life of a whole community. Never shifting his own standards, never compromising, never conforming to the dictates of the rich or the poor, yet always truly with the people in the marketplace of his day. Over the years, Urban Christian Outreach has listened carefully to Jesus' way of operating. And I believe we have listened carefully to the spirit that lies behind it. I hasten to add that we have done so imperfectly. In the words of the Book of Common Prayer, for myself as UCO, I have done things that I ought not to have done, and I have left undone some things that I ought to have done. Definitely so. But in my leadership of UCO, I have always kept this vision before us, the vision of placing presence before program, the vision of quietly coming alongside struggling people on the sidewalks of the downtown city, the practice of modifying one's own material expectations in order to be authentically with the people, to live more simply so that others may simply live. It's my hope and prayer, and I believe it's the expectation of the board of UCO, that this will continue into the new era of UCO's work after I leave at the end of May. Changes will happen. Changes will be welcomed as a new staff person brings fresh insight for age-old problems. And I'm excited about the idea that they will have gifts and skills that I have never had. Changes will be welcomed. But still living and working simply and relationally, whilst fully aware of the complexity of numerous issues, this simplicity is a cornerstone of UCO's work. Built on the foundation of Jesus Christ and his free salvation offered to every person. Living simply so that others may simply live. Thank you.